going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And welcome you back into another edition of Meet Meet Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt, Red Bird, and AMedlock1 on Twitter. We took last week off because, you know, there's not much going on right now, folks. You know that. There's just what we got to do sometimes is take a break instead of rehashing everything for the 15th time of saying we don't know anything. So, but Alan, since we've talked last, well, first of all, how you doing? How's things in Tulsa? And how are y'all dealing with the virus?
I think that we've made it through this. Okay. Doing well. That listens to this on the regular, and they may not be listening now. We have a senior this year, which has had kind of added level of anxiety of those things being canceled. But I think that we're over it. We're moving into summer, and we went by the other day and things like that. So thanks for asking, but things are going well. Life is trying to come back to normal. We kind of have a government budding of the governor of Oklahoma and the mayor of Tulsa, but I think everybody will eventually be on the same page. And, I think that some stuff opened yesterday, not non-essential stuff opened yesterday, and a lot of things really on May 1st are supposed to come back, but I feel like we've made it through okay. Everybody's hair has been held up. We have locked the doors and hadn't gotten out much, and I get fortunate. People can't see the same thing. So,
yeah, that is true. Over here, Arkansas has never gone into full lockdown like many other states did. So some things are still open and hasn't kept people inside. Yeah, I feel like quarantine hasn't really hit this area because anytime you go by the grocery store parking lot or the Lowe's parking lot or whatever, it always seems to be crammed with people, but it's not spreading either. Sure. We've only got 30 something cases and there's only like about 15 or 16 active. So, you can get away with that right now. Who knows, if ever did hit at a right spot, it could be a problem.
I will add that, we were working on trying to fill some gaps and stuff that we have. And we've had a lot in the rain/sunlight. So everything's growing well. And we've been pretty fortunate, but Amber and I got out of bed early this morning to go and hit some of the greenhouses around here. And, you would never know that anybody was in lockdown today. It was a beautiful day, but every parking lot from about 7 on was completely full. I think everybody's just kind of stir crazy, and this is the way that they can do it. Today was one of the worst days that I had seen as far as lockdown goes about people being out.
Yeah. See, ours is, like I said, I've been fortunate. I can go to work. So my days are fairly similar to what they would have been anyway. I mean, I go to work, I come home, and we don't do anything else but that. But, kind of fortunate in that regard. They're talking about starting to open things up a little bit more, even the few things that were shut down, hair salons and barbershops and gyms and, in-store dining. Those are going to be maybe some of those things are going to be open come the 4th of May, and, we'll see, and we'll see what businesses take into it. I think, I think some of these businesses are going to open the doors really quickly. I think some of them are going to be a little bit more hesitant because there's going to be people that are going to be there as soon as the doors open, don't get me wrong, but there are going to be people that are a little bit more hesitant about getting out. I had to go into Tractor Supply today for tried to do all my business outside, and I had to go in and pay. And I felt a little bit, you know, like, hey, I don't need these people that close to me, you know, and especially when there's people out there not wearing masks and stuff. So there's going to be people that are very hesitant about getting back into the regular swing of things, which kind of, to some degree, brings us back to this baseball stories that we have, because, you know, we're talking about quarantine plans. I don't want to get into the most recent one here in a minute, but I think, boy, there'd be hesitation if and when baseball returns this year to, like, St. Louis. You know, they would they get 40,000? Do you think there would be a noticeable drop off in attendance of people that are just a little bit too concerned to get into a big, huge ballpark like that with people that they don't know?
That's a great question. I've wondered about that. If you would see a lack just out of fear of, you know, and it'd be tough to police those measures. And I think that the hassle of it may push enough people away, push as many people away as that is the fear of getting sick. It would be a pretty big deal. I mean, it's really funny to where here in Tulsa, immediately when things start opening up a little bit, restaurants start pushing back. They're just like, well, we don't think it's safe to do it. And B, we can't operate at half capacity. So the social distancing measures hurt us as being closed. And so I kind of wonder how much of that mentality is going to happen on the, you know, on the cities that host these things and, or host the games and how much that roll off goes into attendance and whatnot. So it's to where at one point I was thinking, we're going to see baseball with fans this year. I don't know why I feel like there may be a year like this year. I'm feeling a little bit that that's going to happen, but that it begs the question is, what are going to watch? I don't know.
Yeah. And the more and more I see this, I can't imagine that they're going to have fans anywhere this year. If they, you know, and there's still a lot of if on whether we're going to see games this year. It feels like you said, it feels like we've kind of passed the worst of it. And, you know, here we are, we're still not even to May yet. So there feels like there's a good chance of getting some sort of baseball back out there. But when you look at, you know what, some of these states are closed down until June, right? I mean, New York and Illinois, I mean, it becomes very difficult to, you know, you can't play baseball in those sitting in those areas. Well, if you can't have the Yankees and Mets and you can't have the Cubs and the White Sox playing in their parks, you know, it seems like it's very likely you're going to wind up with one of these quarantine plans. Because there's a few other places enough, you know, California is probably a little bit of that nature too.
Sure.
I haven't seen anything on what they're doing just right now. And so we get the new plan. You know, we talked about the Florida plan before. We've talked about the Florida, Arizona, or the Arizona plan, and then the Arizona, Florida plan. Well, now it's those two places plus Texas. And, you know, my first opinion on some of this is that's three places you have to keep under quarantine. But I don't know, for me, three locations, while you still have to kind of keep it under quarantine, it may be a little easier to quarantine because it's fewer people.
Yeah, that's true. And it's funny to talk about it. I do kind of wonder if, since we've made it to this point of maybe over the hump a little bit, if I kind of like, one, I just want to see the sport return. So any plan we've heard, I thought, let's make it work. Let's do something. I kind of liked when Texas was involved, just because there was a symmetry to it to have three number of teams in a certain location, and in the ballpark situation that would work. The further along we go, I start thinking that it's either going to be a let them wear and end in ballparks with fans, or nothing at all this year. And so when you say that you can't see a ballpark with or stadium with fandom this year, it's a little, it makes me a little nervous that we're going to see any baseball at all. But you do kind of wonder what how the balls would work in these states that they have the proposals.
Yeah, and I mean, again, the positive thing about central locations is there's less travel. I mean, if a ball player came down sick, he could be three states away with, played two series or whatever by the time they actually start seeing symptoms. And that's the worst thing about this virus, of course, is the fact that you can be healthy or feel like you're healthy or look like you're healthy for 4 or 5 days while you're carrying it around. Or some people never get sick, but they can carry it around. And so it becomes very difficult to quarantine people at some degree. If you keep it focused in on some teams, like you said, either 10 teams at each spot or, some sort of unbalanced breakup or however we want to do it. At least your travel is less and you're contained there. And hopefully if there is a little bit of a breakout, it's contained and, maybe that side shuts down and you have two other places. I don't know. I would find it very weird to play without fans. And I think the other portion of this that we need to talk about is there does seem to be some tension between the players' union and the ownership about this agreement that they had about the players getting paid or not paid if the season comes back. Ownership seems to be of the opinion that if there's no fans, they should be able to pay the players less. And the players say, no, that's not what we agreed to. It could well be that, I would think that both sides would come to some sort of agreement, but these are baseball owners, baseball players. They make stupid decisions all the time. Would it be an issue where baseball could return, say, June 1st or July 1st or whatever, but it gets pushed back even more because these two sides are fussing over, who getting paid what?
That's my biggest fear. And I know that we touched on a little bit. I can't remember if we did it before the show, not a couple weeks ago, but whenever there was some rumors out and about that the players were supposed to come out with a plan that they thought they were going to do their kind of a proposal, or maybe say, this is the one that we've signed off on, or one of those things. And we didn't hear anything like that. The only thing we heard from the players was Clark pushing back on some of those money And I go, that the optics is going to it will be terrible if they don't play because they can't agree on financial gain for one side or the other. But you're right, it's baseball, and that's we've dealt with this before. But it's not a very good look, and I do wonder if some of that pushback isn't necessarily money, but maybe a situation to where players that have made their money and aren't necessarily, I don't know if any of the guys are truly needy. I'm sure some of the younger ones are, but we're not going to go. You know what I mean? We've made our money, so we've opted not to do this. And I wonder if there's some of that that's going on, and that's why there's a little bit of pushback as well. I don't know. It's such a weird dynamic. I mean, you could almost see it going any direction.
Yeah, I mean, you really think, I mean, you don't worry too much about the guys that, like you say, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, those guys, you could cut their salary by 50% and they really wouldn't notice it much. I mean, that's just the way it is. But, I mean, you look at Jack Flaherty this year. He's supposed to make, what, $600,000? If they don't make it back until midseason, he's down to $300,000. And granted, probably anybody listening to this podcast would really like to make $300,000 a year. I surely would. But in the grand scheme of things, especially when you talk about all the expenses that it goes into keeping yourself in that kind of level, $300,000 is not that much. And then to say, okay, we're only going to pay you 75% of that because the fans aren't in the stands. I can understand how that kind of starts, you start feeling it more for those guys in that first three range. And that's that area that are being underpaid as it is. I mean, Jack Flaherty, we've talked about this so many times. He should be getting paid more than $600,000. And so he's going to get less. Now, could they come up with some sort of agreement where the top 10, 15% of contracts, take a pay cut and the rest of them are left alone, or, the bottom, anybody making less than $1 million doesn't have their contract, affected. Maybe that's where the compromise comes in, because it feels like, you know, they're going to have to do something, because and the owners have a point. I'm not saying that they're not, you know, the owners are in better shape than the players are. Let's don't get me wrong, even with, but they're, you know, they have no revenue coming in right now either for the most part. And there's a lot of, you know, they're covering a lot of expenses right now. So I can understand why they would want to cut it. Now, part of it's because they want to try to make a profit, and more profit than they would have made anyway. But I can see where they're coming from. I don't know that I agree with them, but I can at least see where they're coming from.
Yeah. It's a two-way street. I mean, without a doubt. And, you know, it was whether people will say it was for the look or perception in the beginning, but they were the ones to give money to start, you know, to front that money. So, you know, I don't know if that even makes any difference, but yeah, that's an interesting plan. I didn't think about that, of having a tiered approach to how, you know, any reduction would work. And, you know, some of these guys that, you know, haven't gone to arbitration yet, or we're going to be on some extended 40 man because they're going to have with the ball club the whole time. I mean, that'd be easy money, you would assume, but it would be interesting to see what it was, because, you know, it's going to buck the trend of any other, you know, contract that they would have gotten just to get called up. So, yeah, I mean, and that fact worries me too. Because you're thinking, how many things have to happen for this to be in place just to get back on the field? And, you know, the list starts getting longer, and it makes you a little more nervous.
Yeah, I mean, there's just one more thing. And then, you again, every day that goes by without some sort of idea and some sort of plan is just one day closer to becoming too far along. You know, we're getting to, you know, they're going to come a point. Well, here we are getting close to the end of April. So, you know, you've got a month, sure, probably, right?
Sure.
Before, I mean, you have to, I'm not saying that they have to be back on the field by the end of May, but you've got to know by the end of May, okay, we're going to come back July 1st. So we're going to spend 2 weeks down there, you know, so we're training, whatever the case may be. You know, we are starting to run out of time for them to make, you know, to make these plans and have some sort of reasonable season.
Yeah, I mean, May seems to be the big month since some of these states are opening back up. You know, NBA cities and states that are opening back up or allowing their players back into training facilities starting on the 1st. So that's going to get a lot of things moving, because I think there's a little bit of unity between these big sports leagues about when they're coming back. I will say, there's conversations going on in Oklahoma right now, and I would think in probably college football right now, that some of these things may start in January. And you're wondering, you're thinking, well, man, if that's pushed out that far, you know, is this going to be a feasible option? And it's a scary thought. I mean, that's the worst thing that could happen to me, is go from football to football. You know what I mean? I hate to say that, and I don't want to offend anybody, any fans, but, you know, that summer is synonymous with baseball with me and my family, and it's tough. I mean, not a woe is me situation. People are in a lot worse situation than I am, but, you know, as a sports fan, it kind of stinks that some of these conversations are being had. So I would think May is pretty big. In that timeline of maybe starting around the 1st of July makes a lot of sense, and let's just hope they can work something out on that. Something it popped up that I thought about, to where some of the Arizona Heat situations were talked about, to where you'd probably have to play the majority of the night games there. And I mean, that would probably have to be a consideration in Texas as well. I will say that, that they have some great, I mean, that part of the allure to Texas to me, not that I'd be down there, if, you know, if they would let us, I would. But, you know, if there won't be any fans in those type of situations. But you to have two big league ready ballparks in the same city, you know, in Arlington, and then you have three top quality minor league facilities within like 3 hour radius. Some even as close as like 30 minutes to an hour. So there are plenty of places where teams could play down there. But I thought about that as well. I was like, Heat would have to be a consideration in Texas as well late in the summer.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're willing to spread it out far enough, sure, like you said, you can go to Houston and play in the yeah, dome, in a retractable roof, and the new Arlington Stadium has a retractable roof. So you'd at least get a couple of games. And, yeah, you could play. I didn't even think about the fact that they got the, you know, the the game, the park that Arlington's vacating is still probably worth, unless they've started to do a lot of the modifications to make it turn into soccer, which I don't know if they have.
Well, and the only thing that they had done so far was they didn't put turf down, but they renovated it for the XFL football league. So I would think that that would be a quick turnover back to where, you know, they would have to if this was put into place.
Sure. So, you know, that's a place where, you know, maybe you're playing two or three games during the day and they play in the domes, and then you've got an extra game at night, or, you know, at that place or some of the minor league, you know, facilities. Whereas if you can limit the number of games you can play in the, you know, Texas heat at night, then you're doing all right.
Sure.
I mean, you're right. If they don't have those domes, you can't play in them. If you're talking about playing like in Arizona, that's tough to play regularly out in the 100 degrees.
Yeah. It's tough for your body.
Yeah. But you know, that's the good, like I said, the best thing. And that may be why you don't, if you're going to do this, you don't do it in a balanced way, because Arizona does have just the one park that can do that. So you put fewer teams out in Arizona, let them focus on playing at Chase Field. So maybe you've got 6 to 8 teams out there that play each other a lot. And then you have the other 24 teams kind of split between Florida, which I guess could use, I don't know my geography very well, but in theory, you could still use Tampa Bay and Miami, both their dome stadiums, as well as the spring training sites, if you needed to. You could have more teams there and in Texas. You know, again, there's a lot of logistics to work out. I'm sure that they're working on them, even if they don't ever use the plans. But, you know, what concerns me a little bit, at least, is, you know, Florida and Texas have significant numbers of cases of the virus, you know. You know, you and I were talking earlier, you know, we're fortunate being here in the middle. You know, Arkansas's got less than 3,000 cases, has had, and most of those have recovered. I looked, Oklahoma is just a little over 3,000. You know, a lot of these Midwestern states, we don't have much. But then you get into Texas, and of course, there's more people, so there's going to be more cases, but you know, they're what, at 24,000, 25,000. Florida's around the same way. You know, a lot in Louisiana, that, you know, see how that works. You know, that's a concern, because, you know, you have to be a little bit more vigilant, I think, in some of those places, trying to keep that quarantine in place, because it's a little easier to break it.
That's a good point. And I know Houston has been hit hard, you know, and it's but they're trying to bounce back quick, though. The state of Texas is, so you never know what they're up to.
This is true. So I don't know. I obviously, you want it to be played in front of fans.
Sure.
You want it to be played in Busch Stadium and all that. I do start to wonder. There is a line for me, I think, on what, but that. And I think we've talked about it a little bit before, but, you know, when we start talking about the crazy, you know, what the Florida plan was, that, you know, a whole bunch of divisions, you know, where you're playing the Yankees and all them as a division. You know, I don't know that I'm big on that. You know, if you're starting to change a lot of the things so that this season's just so incomparable to any other thing, you know, again, it's going to be because of shorter games, and there's going to be an expanded rosters and things like that. And that's fine. But when you start really kind of tinkering with the underlying framework of baseball, I start to get a little bit more of, maybe we should just wait, you know?
Sure, sure. And you know what? I don't feel as strongly about that as you do, but I will tell you that enough of these plans come out that make me think that there are more plans than reality. And that kind of factors into that, to where you kind of know that this may be a we've got to push our chips in and go all the way, or we're not going to do anything at all, you know, type of situation. And it was funny, because I was starting to think, okay, there's a lot of leaked news that was coming out, and they're all plans, and there's always the redacted, we're throwing a lot of stuff against the wall, we're doing this and this and this. In Mark Stax's chat on The Athletic on Friday, I'd asked him, I said, well, and I meant it more as a personal, basically, I was trying to get him to say, well, the media is either A or nay, we don't think we'll be there anyway type situation. But I basically kind of asked him, I said, well, just as a familiarity situation, I'm assuming, and can you back me up on this, that the Florida situation makes more sense. And he sent me on back. He said the players would definitely like that just because a lot of them live down there and they're all close. And he said, but I'm of the mind that all of these plans are just plans. And I think that they're those things are further along than we think. And that if they're going to play, they're going to play. And that's kind of what I think as well. Like, I'm like, okay, we're a month into this and there's nothing even more concrete than we had. But like I said, May could be big and that could change that. But you do wonder if it's going to be a, hey, let's just do it and let's roll the dice on this. And if things start to look better sometime by some point this month or May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot, like you say, a lot of things that still have to be figured out. And then I think, you know, I think a lot of this could be really torpedoed really quickly by some of the big name players. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen Mike Trout saying, hey, I'm having a kid this summer. I'm not going to go be quarantined for, you know, during this birth and this first month. And Clayton Kershaw
said, lot.
You know, he's got a kid that's, I don't remember how old, but, you know, it's like, you know, they need to be able to interact with their, they don't need to be, you know, because, you know, you leave, you know how it is. You've had, you know, you leave them one day, you leave them for 2 months, and all of a sudden, you know, they're growing up and driving. Yeah. I mean, you miss a lot. And there's no reason for them to have to do that, too. I mean, so I don't know how that works. But, I mean, I feel like if Mike Trout says he's not going to play 2020 in a quarantine situation, you know, that kind of stuff really, I mean, you're already talking about, you know, this season not being a real season to some degree, but then, you know, if the Angels don't have if the best player in the game isn't playing and the Angels don't have him, or, you know, there's three or four of these other stars that aren't playing, you know, how fair is this season?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and that is probably one of my biggest worries. I was the guys that just put their foot down and say, we're not going. And, you know, I feel like I want to say the competitive nature takes over on some of the guys and it's loosened up enough to where we don't have to worry about those. But a month ago, I would have said that and would have thought we'd have been in a better situation now than we were. So I don't know. I mean, that and you're right. You don't want to cater to the top tier, but how bad do you want to play? You know, one of those situations. I mean, what sense does it make if half your guys don't want to come back?
Yeah, and what's the, you know, what are the ramifications if, you know, if you do play without them? Like if KK, you know, KK, they're still trying to get him back to Korea for his family. You know, what if he gets over there and doesn't want to come back or can't come back? You know, maybe if, you know, there's still, you know, some issues about getting back into the country. I mean, are the Cardinals, you know, it kind of scrambles them a little bit, right? I mean, I know they've got some options with Ponce de Leon and Gomber and things like that, but, you know, you're paying this guy to, you know, and we thought he was going to be this kind of swing starter type of thing, which, again, with Michaelis in theory being healthy by time stuff, maybe it's not as important. But still, I mean, you know, what does that mean? Where does he go for next year? I mean, do the Cardinals need to, you know, I don't think they'd want to void the contract. I don't think they would have any issue to that. But, you know, sometimes there's legalities. You know, it's there's a lot of different things there that haven't really been fleshed out on what that would mean. You know, I mean, I'm sure Mike Trout would say, hey, I'd rather, you know, be here for the birth of my child and I don't care about the money. You know, but is there a way for players to go and then come back, you know, be quarantined for a couple weeks and then be able to play again? You know, I don't know. Maybe that's the way it works out, because it just feels like taking these guys away from their families for 3 or 4 months at a stretch is asking a lot for, and again, I know they're getting paid a lot and I know that, you know, comes with some certain responsibilities, but I don't know if it requires them to be, you know, less than human.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the list just gets longer of all the moving parts that are going to have to happen. You know, how would you like to be in the inside offices of one of these pro leagues right now, trying to figure all this out with knowing that everything comes with a huge, you know, question mark of certainty? It'd be tough. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, that's that. And I wonder how much that plays into, are we going to do this or not? you know, because it may just be too much work. I mean, I hate to say it like that.
Well, and then, I mean, then, I mean, just the ideas of what happens if you, you know, you do this and somebody somehow gets sick, even if it's not a player, even, but if it is a player, you know, what if a player gets sick enough to, you know, I don't want to say a fatality, but it could happen, or, you know, either that or loses the ability to play or something like that. I mean, where's the liability there? What if the player turns around and sues MLB? You know, why are we playing this? What if something happens where, you know, quarantine gets broken and you have another outbreak and people sue MLB, or, you know, even if nothing else, get a black eye for trying to do this. I mean, those are the kind of ramifications that are going on in these discussions too. And that's the real hard thing, because you just don't know when you can technically, you know, feel confident about opening up. Because, I mean, you know, we keep hearing second wave, we keep hearing about the fall, and, you know, it's going to, you know, revisit us back that maybe then, you know, without a vaccine out there, it feels like, you know, what, you don't ever know when you could open and you might have to shut right back down.
Yeah. Yeah. The if is the that's the biggest concern, and it goes with a lot of things. And that's important. You know, what if someone gets sick, and what if someone gets really, really sick, and it's a scary situation. And, it's adds into that uncertainty, and it's things just become so incredibly hard to answer.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, and again, I feel like we've probably talked about parts of this.
Yeah, it's tough not to. I agree.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, probably made a lot of the same points, but, you know, it's, again, there's not as much going on. The other part of what did happen this week was this report that came out that said basically minor league baseball, you know, there's always been this, there's been this negotiation between them and MLB. Minor league baseball was going to basically was at a point where they were willing to accept the contraction terms that MLB was putting down. Now, you know, the minor leagues came out and said, hey, we haven't agreed to anything, and that's not necessarily accurate, and whatever. But I feel like, especially with probably some teams hemorrhaging money to some degree with this, you know, not being able to play. And, you know, we're talking about the minor league season right here. I don't see an option for a minor league season to play right now to some degree.
No. Yeah. Go ahead.
So it may be that it's, they're kind of forced up against the wall, but it's still hard to imagine that, you know, 40 teams maybe. And I don't, again, that's, it's like they may have decided that some teams need to go and they're haggling over the number, but, you know, it's tough to imagine those 40 teams just kind of being sent out of the, into the baseball wilderness.
Yeah. It is a very odd situation. That's whenever that report came out that they were going to have to accept accept what the Major League Baseball was offering. It was one of those, it was a gut punch, but then at this point you're thinking, well, we're actually only a month into whatever, you know, the proposed season, but, you know, that's huge for minor league baseball. And I was thinking, all these teams are hemorrhaging money to where they're going to have to do this. It's going to be a sad state of affairs. And it's pretty worrisome. And I agree with you. That's the one that I think is going to be the most impossible to get back is minor league baseball. And that's painful to say, because that's such a huge element in Tulsa and in Little Rock. And, you know, just in any of these cities without major sports, or states without major sports, to be, you know what I mean, in the Arkansas situation, or, you know, we have the Thunder here, but we're kind of in the same boat. And the fact that that's not coming back, that's one of those that it's pretty tough. And that's, I just don't see how that's going to be feasible, as much as I would like to. I think they're trying to be optimistic about it, but I don't know how, you know, it would almost a month after the big league start, and, you know, when is that going to be? I mean, they're going to play from Labor Day to Christmas. I mean, I just don't see it happening, and it's sad to say. Yeah, I did like some of the refuted releases that came out, that some of the things were inaccurate and whatnot, and then the one that came out and said, we've had some productive meetings, which probably tells you they weren't at all productive, and probably weren't at all that amiable. You know, that's the way that I looked at that. I was like, this is probably going to get a little bit ugly. Yeah, but when you look at that proposed 40 teams, there's some interesting scenarios that come out of it if those are the teams that are on the chopping block.
Yeah, you know, first of all, though, I will say that last press release where they said they had good negotiations may be the most amiable press release that we've seen out of these guys. I mean, they've thrown some slings at arrows.
Yeah, that's true.
In the press so far. So, you know, if they did that, at least maybe they've decided to, maybe they realized that, if nothing else, arguing in the press right now when everybody's,
Well, and the way that's why I kind of said that is, you know, when you only have one paragraph, that probably means there's not much better to say.
Yeah,
and that may be because there wasn't anything better that happened, or it's not a good time to announce to people what did happen.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know. Now, again, if you want to really get into this whole thing, the minor league thing, you know, unsurprisingly, Tara Wellman and Kyle Reese, Tara has been on this for a decade now, and Kyle, of course, is the minor league guru of the Cardinal fandom. Both of them talk about it on Chirps, on their Chirps podcast. So definitely, if you're interested in the minor league discussion here, go listen to them because they've got probably better grip on it than we do. But, you know, Alan and I were talking about it this week, Alan, I know you looked some stuff up, but like you said, if there's some teams going, if the teams that are out there are the ones that get cut, and that's a big if right now, we don't know exactly how this is going to work because, again, it doesn't seem to be tied on if you have a bad stadium or if you're not making money, or it's almost a little bit random. Even though the baseball says it's tied to those things, it doesn't look like it because some teams that are on there have good facilities and some teams that you would think we should be making money are on there, stuff like that. But it looks like, you know, the whole landscape of the minor leagues would change. And as you were saying, there's some teams going to be moving up around.
Yeah, that's whenever I sat down and looked at it, and then I linked the teams that were on that list. That's the only list that we have to go by, you know, so I may be completely wrong on what happens.
Right.
Four of those are AA teams. So to make right, four teams would have to be elevated from a single A level, high A level, to match those teams. What I think is interesting, the one that jumps off the page to me, Cincinnati loses three of their seven affiliates right away, including their AA team. And you're thinking, okay, now things are going to have to shift a little bit. What got us to this question was, Daniel and I are both familiar with the Texas League because we've been affiliated with it for so long, being in Arkansas and in Oklahoma. Huge league, and it's been around forever. Very profitable. And there's some interesting teams in it. And I wondered if any of the runoff, not necessarily the Texas League teams being cut, we knew that probably wasn't going to happen, but how much realignment would actually happen to where if each 30 big league affiliates get their four affiliates underneath them, how much of those things are going to be more of a regionally based to where – let's just say the Mariners get more of their four teams in the Western time zone or Mountain time zone, and the Cardinals or Royals keep most of their teams in a Central time zone. There may be some shifting around. There are right now three AA leagues for all 30 teams. And you wonder if that doesn't change a little bit, and if, you know, some teams may be added if that's going to factor into where they maybe centralize some of these organizations. I think that's probably something to watch. There will probably be a minor league realignment with some of these that are gone. Now, a lot of the teams too are also the rookie league teams, and those are the ones where you look at of those are opportunities that kids aren't going to have. And that's pretty sad. I mean, because if you start cutting off, I understand that this is a special situation this year of the draft being, you know, shorter in rounds. But it's also one of those that you can see the writing on the wall that they're going to shorten in some way, regardless, moving from here on out. So those are opportunities that are going to be lost. And I guarantee you, Daniel and Tara know miles more about this than I do. But just looking at the teams and the links on those, it's very interesting to see how they would have to realign and match up for each affiliate organization. And that was the thing that kind of surprised me. I was like, there's a lot of things that are going to have to move around, and four high A teams are going to benefit from this.
Yeah. What struck me and kind of what happened when Al and I were talking earlier this week, you know, I was looking at these teams and the ownership of the teams, because, you know, we know Cardinals own Springfield, which means that AA Cardinals are not going to change forever. You know, it's always going to be in Springfield, at least until the Cardinals decide they want to sell it. You know, they owned Memphis, they sold it. I think they still have maybe a little portion of it, but, you know, Memphis is an issue. They own Johnson City. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I talked to Tara Wellman and about this, and she said, you know, every team in the Appalachian League is owned by their own, you know, by their major league team. Cardinals own Johnson City, yet that's the league that's being like completely eliminated. And it really surprised me to see, you know, Major League Baseball wanting to cut teams that they physically owned. You know, I think that, you know, I can understand them not really caring about local ownership or things like that, but you would think, you know, they've put in the, you know, they own this team and they can't sell Johnson City. I mean, who's going to buy a baseball team that is all of a sudden not affiliated with anything in Major League Baseball? They're going to either have to continue that or sell it at not at a very good, you know, probably at a loss. It just seems very interesting to see them kind of cutting their own teams out of this mix. I would not have expected that.
Yeah. And, you know, begs the question, are these teams being a loss for them anyway? You know, that's what kind of worries me. And we probably answer our own question on that. That's why they're going to be cut in the first place. But yeah, I mean, it's a super interesting deal, because that's what kind of that conversation, like only teams in the Texas League are owned by the parent club. That was a little bit, the Rangers used to own Frisco, but they don't anymore. But the guy who, Seth, you know, Greenberg, not Seth, but the Greenberg Corporation that owned the Rangers at one time, now they still own Frisco. So that's kind of, you know, kind of how it goes. Okay. Then Corpus Christi is owned by the Astros, and Springfield, of course, is owned by the Cardinals. So that, of course, those weren't going to be top. We talked about that already. But yeah, that's a great question. I mean, what is the, they seem more than willing to let some of these teams go. So I would like to see read into that a little bit more from somebody who knows a little bit more about, you know, why they're so willing to do that.
Yeah, that did surprise me. Again, I'm sure it's a, you know, a short term loss for long term gain type of idea for Major League Baseball, but it's really surprised me to see that. Now, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what number they come up with. Because there's a real strong possibility. I've read a few articles. I think it makes a lot of sense that baseball is going to try to recoup some of these losses by speeding up expansion.
Yeah.
Because expansion is what? I don't know what the fees are, but I think they're like close to $1 billion sometimes. I don't remember exactly how much it would cost to get an expansion team, but it's a lot, you know, and that's that's a way to get these things going. And so if they do that, then of course those teams are going to need four minor league teams per. And so there's eight teams that maybe cut here, but then get added back in that situation. So, you know, maybe there'll be some modifications in that regard. It's still going to be a loss of jobs. It's still going to be a loss of communities. I mean, cause you know, there's a discussion to be had about, you know, how much these teams are teams for baseball or how much are they affiliated teams. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially in small town, you know, these rookie city, like Johnson City. Johnson City is where the Cardinals have their rookie league team, and that's one that's on the chopping block. Under the plans, Johnson City would still have a team. It just wouldn't be affiliated with Major League Baseball. So, I mean, granted, it becomes very, very difficult for a team like that to survive because they have to start playing the players and things like that. But assuming it could, you know, are people in Johnson City fans because the guy they see here could be playing for the Cardinals someday? Or are they just fans because that's part of their city? You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I really don't. I mean, Tara and Kyle got into it, and they feel like it's the affiliation carries a lot of weight. It probably does. I think that the idea that you're watching a guy that could be a Major League Baseball player someday, and really, you know, if you're a season ticket holder to Johnson City, you probably get to know this guy. And, you know, if it's a Dylan Carlson type or something, and now he's knocking on the door to be a major leaguer, you're like, you've got that extra investment. And I get that. But I still think that there's something about just having that community team that, you know, I mean, you look at St. Paul Saints, who are actually a team that's going to be going from, if the reports are right, going from independent ball into affiliated baseball. But St. Paul has been a independent league for a long time. You know, J.D. Drew played there when after that, mm-hmm. Before he was Cardinal. And I think, you know, that it's obviously survived well. It's probably a unique case to some degree, but it can happen. So I don't know. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I think I'm rambling about now.
No. I completely agree. I mean, on my side of the table, I feel like Tulsa has gone from a Cardinal affiliate to a Ranger affiliate, who both of those you can see centrally located, to a Rockies affiliate because the Rangers had built their own farm systems at that point, or built their own, you know, minor league teams at this point. And the crowds around here have always been good, just because it's a good sports town. You go from the Rockies to the Dodgers, and it's one of those where that it didn't match up very well. But what the Dodgers have done, they put a lot of their studs here for a long time. You know, they don't move them around a whole lot. And I think that it's probably 50-50 community to affiliate. I know that things were sour toward the end of the relationship with the Rangers and with the Rockies. And I don't think it attendance much because it's a cheap family outing, you know. But that wouldn't maintain for a long time. You know, that's one of those. And that's the only thing. I mean, you hear of the independent teams closing down all the time because they just don't have much. And that's what makes St. Paul out so much. You know, St. Paul's one of the they've gotten quite a few of those comeback guys. And, you know, big leaguers that could agree on contracts or whatnot have done it. And, you know, Bill Murray's an owner. And that's, you know, that's the thing. And he's visible in those things. And that stuff helps. So, you know, I good for them. I'm glad to hear that they're in the mix. But you do wonder the feasibility on some of these. I've been to Palm Beach Cardinals games when they had them. And it was it's fun, but it's like a high school type crowd, you know. And you wonder if that would probably be the case, you know, at some of these other facilities if they aren't affiliated with a franchise like the Cardinals.
Yeah, I got to thinking. I have a book. I need to go see if I can dig it out. And I was trying to figure out what it was called. It's a bluegrass baseball. It's a book about the three teams in Kentucky, which were independent teams.
That'd be awesome.
I don't know that all of them were independent teams. I guess there's definitely minor league teams. So I think there's some independent there too. It's an interesting book because of one of the things in it is it's got Jose Altuve in it. So because he was in one of those teams at that time, before he became a major leaguer. And so it's an interesting book. If you want to, you can find it on Amazon. I got to go. Been years since I've read it, but I think maybe it was the minor league teams and independent ball that was playing in there. It's a very interesting book, but I don't think that has anything to do with what I'm saying. It's a difficult thing. I do think about that. I think about Little Rock, and like it said, they were Cardinals forever. That was one of the reasons people around here were Cardinal fans, and that's kind of what the point is, and I know that Tara and Kyle were making, is that that's you're not necessarily. I mean, the teams may have a fan base, but if you want to grow baseball, if you want to grow professional baseball, you don't do it by shutting down teams because, yeah, Cardinals were huge around.
Yeah.
And part of that was because they were the minor league affiliate. Now, you know, the Angels, then they moved to the Angels, and then now that they're Mariners.
Yeah.
You know, those are two teams that I'm sure, but if I lived in Little Rock and I don't get down to, I get down to a game every couple of years or something. We just don't make it down as much as I was going to this year. And see how that happens. But I think if I lived in Little Rock, I would go no matter. I mean, it would be nice. I think it's better that it's tied to Major League Baseball. I think the idea that you can see guys coming through, or I think the biggest draw with that regard, especially at AA and AAA, is rehabbing big leaguers, right? I mean, to know that, you know, Adam Wainwright's going to be in there, you know, pitching a rehab start. I think that's a huge draw for these guys that an unaffiliated team wouldn't have.
Sure. Well, you know, last year, I believe it was, you know, Kershaw pitched here in Tulsa, and he was here for two or three games, you know, one pitching and two hanging out, which was rare for a star. And it was a tough ticket. I mean, I had more phone calls for my seats in that 3 days than I've had in probably 3 or 4 years. You know, it was crazy. Another one stands out to me. I remember in the early 90s during his comeback attempt, Fernando Valenzuela pitched to Tulsa, and it was the same situation.
Yeah.
And that's just to kind of back up your point, I mean, those are the affiliated things that make such a difference. And you see the growth of some of these guys, and it's a sad state of affairs that are going to exist in some of these cities that have existed for so long. One of the names that jumped off that list to me is one kind of like you. I mean, I was raised in the Texas League. I mean, that's just how it is, and they've always been affiliated with them. But the Jackson Generals are one of the teams that's going to be gone. And they've never really found footing in any league after leaving the Texas League. You know, they were even independent ball for a year, I think. Maybe two. And, you know, they were the Jackson Mets in the 80s, you know, where it was the it was fun. I mean, those days were fun. It brings back a lot of memories. And those are things that I hate to see taken away from these towns that host, you know, your minor league affiliates.
Well, and it's funny, as you do that, I type this in, and the thing that pops up is that Jacksonville was supposed to host the, you know, the All-Star game for that league this year. Yeah. So that's a little bit weird. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if it's a team that's, you know, a ballpark and stuff that's good enough to host, you know, the AA All-Star game, you know, are they, you know, why can't they, you know, and then all of a sudden they're going to be contracted? I mean, that's weird. I mean, that's really what it's boiled down to some degree, is there's just not okay, we want to take out the 10 teams that have the worst facilities, or we want to take out the 10 teams that have the worst attendance, or we want to take out the 10 teams that, you know, do this or that. It just kind of seems like it's a little bit of piecemeal. It's like, okay, these teams we don't want. I mean, and a lot of it is in the lower levels. They're just trying to eliminate, you know, rookie ball or whatever the case may be. And that's not unprecedented. I mean, you know, I'm sure that minor league baseball used to run all the way down to the D leagues. I mean, back in the old days, and back well before our time, but you're talking about, you know, Mutual and all those would have come up through the B and C and D leagues, you know, much less A ball, double A, triple A. I mean, they, a lot of, you know, teams had 7, 8, 9 teams. Before it, you know, of course, expansion started to eliminate a lot of that. And, you know, you still have a lot of the same, you know, teams, same number of teams, if will, just because there's so many more teams, major league teams. But, you know, there have been elimination of classes before. And this feels like that's what they're really trying to do here. We're trying to just cut off that rookie ball. Now, you know, as like I said, I go listen to Chirps. Kyle talks about the idea that they're, you know, while they're cutting here, they're adding some of the Venezuelan leagues, which just makes it look like it's a, you know, much more of a cheap ploy of getting cheap talent, you know, because you don't have to,
yeah,
there's a whole lot into that. So, definitely check that out. But I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see how this all works out. I think the leagues are going to look a lot different, it sounds like. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like, you know, as we've said before, we're kind of isolated here, and you look at the Texas League, I don't see the Texas League changing. There's nobody that's way out of range, and there's stable teams. I don't think they're going to change much. But, you know, the idea of, you know, flying from, you know, having to take a bus for 30 hours to get to your next team, I think they're really going to try to cut down on that. So even if some of the teams stay, you may see them in different configurations.
Sure, and that's whenever I look at the affiliate that are in the Texas League now, you know, the Padres and the Mariners, those are the ones that Dodgers really. I mean, that's I know this is going to sound terrible considering that the Drillers have won a Texas League championship and have gone to the Texas League Championship Series in the last 2 years. I was kind of heartbroken when it was the Dodgers that picked them up. And it was one of those to where I felt like the Rockies were such a good middle-of-the-road team that as a Cardinals fan, I didn't mind going and cheering for them. You know, one of those things. Really worried was at the time that the Dodgers affiliate was – or that the Rockies were leaving and that the affiliation was open, that the that the Dodgers and the Cubs were the bidders for this. And I told my ticket guy that if it's the Cubs, I won't be back. I said, I won't be back. I said, I support them. I said, I just can't do that. So when it was the Royals, it was fine, but it's still – I have a hard time cheering for them, but you know, it's baseball in summer in downtown Tulsa at a great stadium. So I like that. But with there being four West Coast teams with the A's affiliated in the Texas League, you do wonder if that's going to be a shift at some point, considering that none of those West Coast teams are owned by their affiliate. So you do wonder if they're going to be more of a centrally located type situation. Surprised me if one of those teams in Kentucky you were talking about, if that's just I'm just saying if those are available, one of the Texas League teams in Cincinnati were to jump on one of those, if one of the other teams were to move closer to a West Coast type situation, I think I can feel some of those things happening to where travel within the league is better and travel within the league to the affiliate makes more sense. I can see stuff happening.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I mean, I think that, like I say, when I was talking about Texas, like, I mean, I don't see, you know, them moving somebody.
Oh, no. I could see them adding, you know, before I see them, you know, teams leaving.
How things work. But you're right. I think that they're going to do their best. It feels like they want to do their best to get teams to be, well, you know, the Cardinals are probably kind of the model there. And I don't see a lot of that changing. Memphis is what, you know, 2-3 hours, Springfield 2-3 hours, Peoria is not very far, Palm Beach is a ways, but you know that's where their spring training complex is, so that's not a huge deal. You know, and even Johnson City is not just terrible. I mean, it's Tennessee. I mean, it's a little bit farther, but you know, you can only do so much. Yeah. I'm sure that's what they want to do. I mean, because you hear about it all the time. You talk about what the Nationals last year had to deal with. Last year, year four, had to deal with you know, Las Vegas as their AAA team. The Mets have had Las Vegas for a while. I mean, you're flying players, you know, across the country if you need to call them up or if you need to go evaluate them or whatever. I'm sure they're going to do their best to try to, you know, eliminate that as much as possible. But, you know, it could be a whole new makeover of things. And I, you know, again, I don't care much for how they're doing it. I really don't care the fact that they're still going through this while, you know, these teams are hemorrhaging. They could have, you know, put this off a little bit or, you know, tried to help these teams out instead of, you know, kind of pushing them under their heel a little bit more. But there are some points to make on that. You know, I can, you know, again, I don't know that you need to cut as many teams as they have on the block, and they may not do it, but you know, I hate to see it. I hate to see it leaving the small towns, though, because I just think that that's so huge for those communities.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I would be devastated if Tulsa were to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, and no matter who they're affiliated with, it would be tough. So I hate that a sport that's trying to get a younger fan base is eliminating some of that chance for these kids to become fans. Yeah. I like. The symmetrical look of having the four affiliates for each team, I do. And it that's one of those to where it lines up and it's more streamlined that way. But as far as the lost jobs and the lost opportunity for fans and player, it's painful, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it really is. We're hitting around about an hour, but there's one thing I do want to discuss and we probably could save it, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. You know, as I was looking up the Texas League, I noticed they have already canceled their All-Star game. And, you know, here we are. We're recording this on the 25th of April. So there's been I think I was looking it up for post for tomorrow. So this is game 27 that's been canceled. Now, there's a fairly good, there's a really, really good chance that these games are not going to be rescheduled. And these games, even if they happen, are not going to have fan bases. And yet, so far, MLB is just calling them postponed. And by just postponing them, that means that they don't have to issue refunds on these tickets yet. And I know you got some tickets for Christmas, so maybe you really are feeling this as well. But it feels to me like MLB should be doing a better job of canceling these things so they can and reissuing these refunds, because there's some people that had a little bit of extra money when they bought season tickets or when they bought a pack or whatever that could really use that right now, especially since these games, as they're constructed, aren't going to happen.
Yeah, there's been an injury that those had aren't going to happen. You know what I mean? Even in any of the plans that we've heard that, were feasible or not, or, hey, we're going to play from this point on, that whenever they made that comment, you knew it wasn't coming back. You know, it was funny. I said, does that bother you a little bit? She goes, a little bit, yeah. She goes, I felt like we would have heard something now. I said, well, I'm sure they're going to try to do a blanket statement for all the teams. I said, but the pressure's going to do some things now. I go, but, on a personal level, I will probably just roll mine over to next year anyway. So it's not that big of a deal. I would rather have the tickets. And, I mean, even if it was, you lose a little bit of money, I would be fine with that for now. But I understand, some of the ones that paid for a lot higher dollar tickets than me, it would be ready. Now, I have heard if you call them, they'll almost immediately do it, refund you. But it's kind of an unannounced situation. So, I don't know. I know at the minor league level that they just kind of pushing off dates a little bit and haven't really said one way or the other. So that's one I'm a little curious about as well. But, I'm hoping and hoping for the best in that there will be some statement before too long whenever things become a little more certain. But, I can understand why some fans are mad.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult situation for sure. It is interesting to know that perhaps they're doing it individually, because I mean, I get it on the ownership side too, because right now they've got no revenue coming in for the most part. Granted, they've got interest on the money that you've given them probably to some degree and things, investments and things like that, but they don't have the TV revenue. They don't have not nearly the merchandise revenue. They definitely don't have the attendance revenue, all this kind of stuff. So there's that. Plus they are, they're committed to paying, workers. We keep hearing about, I think every team, but maybe a couple have committed to paying their front office staff and everything through May, and may go longer than that. The Cardinals had a $2 million toward, game day staff and things like that. I mean, they're putting out some money right now, some significant money at a time when they don't have a whole lot coming in. Now, again, it's especially in St. Louis, it's the Cardinals. And if they don't have a ton of money set aside, then they're doing everything wrong. I know they've got debt payments on the ballpark. I know they've got debt payments on Ballpark Village 1 and 2. And I'm sure that whole thing has not opened up like they thought, phase 2. But, there is that idea that you could, help your fans out a little bit there that need it. And maybe again, maybe that's what they're that idea that when people call and they can do that, cause it's easier to refund, one person's, in their cash flow than it is to try to refund, 40,000 sure. or whatever.
Yeah.
For the cash flow, it might just work a little bit better. But I just, the idea that you're postponing these games is kind of silly, to some degree, because they're not coming back in any shape or form like that we're seeing. I mean, we talked about the odds of playing in St. Louis this year are slim, but even if they do, and I'm sure they'll just have to, they could say, well, we don't know which of these games we're going to count as, if they play extra games, we don't know which of these games we're going to use these tickets for. But I think right now it's getting to the point where you just refund everybody's money, because you're going to have to redo the schedule so much anyway, and you just resell the tickets. And, honestly, let's be fair, you could probably sell tickets for more than the face value is right now, just because by the time baseball comes back, people are going to be so desperate. Some people are. And again, it gets back to the discussion we had earlier about who wants to jump, be the first person there. But, you know, there are going to be some people that are so desperate to get back to the ballpark that they'll pay an extra $3 or $4 or extra $5 to buy tickets and go.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with
All right. Well, Alan and I have a project we're thinking about for next week. We're talking about maybe a little bit of a draft of best playoff games for the Cardinals. If you've got opinions on that, shoot us Twitter. Hit us up on Twitter at C70 at AMedlock1. You can just let us know what your thoughts are on that if you want to. But we'll probably talk about that next week. That'll give us something to do at least for a little while, because we probably won't have any more baseball. Hopefully we'll have some baseball news, but I don't know what it would be. So anyway, for Alan, I'm Daniel.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate, a swing and a miss, and that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.